I really thought my business was not going to be coming out the other end of COVID. We went into it with a full order book, having done two trade shows in the UK and New York. And literally every day another order would be cancelled, another order would be cancelled. We'd all the stock. It was all piled high on the shelves. And it was just, oh my God, how are we going to get through this? And then when they announced the furlough, I furloughed everybody. So obviously the shop had to shut, so I had to furlough all of them. And then I did a big email to all my customers just going, you know, I've got all this stock. And then I came in to an empty studio and hundreds of orders from my website. And I hadn't done the post for years. And I was like, oh my God, how do I do this?
That's Poppy Trefry, an award-winning Cornish textile designer that started her business in an attic with a 1930s sewing machine and car boot sale fabric in 2003. She now has a well-established business employing an army of sewers across rural Cornwall. I really enjoyed our chat and Poppy's obvious passion, not just for craft, but also business. I can't wait to share her story with you, as well as tell you how her customers came to the rescue during the pandemic. This is a lesson in following your guts and going for it. Enjoy. Welcome to Creative Slurp Podcast, giving you the juice to build a successful creative business with me, Victoria Brown, a creative business advisor, former jeweler and craft fanatic. Now you're in the right place if you want to find real talk, inspiration and the best tips and strategies for your handmade business without the overwhelm. We're all about making business exciting and fun. Now buckle up and let's get started. I actually can't believe it, because I was just saying that I've always loved going to craft centres and craft fairs. And I remember vividly going to craft centres and seeing your work there and always kind of seeing you as like a really well-established craft business. So I'm really grateful that you've come on today to talk to us and tell us about, you know, your story, your business and your journey. Can you tell us a little bit about you and your business for people that don't know what you do?
Okay, my name's Poppy Trefry. People never know how to pronounce it. So there you go. That's the true pronunciation, Trefry, because it's an old Cornish name. I studied textile design at the Winchester School of Art and came out of university thinking, oh my God, I never want to touch textiles ever again, and went off and did completely different things. I went and worked with women's craft cooperatives in Central America for 3 years. But during that, I really got a taste for the kind of business side of craft, of helping people, working with women. So when I came back to Cornwall with a bit of a bump, it has to be said, I kind of thought, what am I going to do next? And I remember writing various different scenarios in a notebook of what I could do next, and really setting up my business is kind of the one that fell into place. So I started in, I found my first studio in 2003, and then 2004, I started making my first collection, and I use a technique called freehand machine embroidery, which is kind of drawing with a sewing machine. And I was kind of self-taught with that. So my degree was in textile design, but I didn't really do that much actual sewing on my degree. So I taught myself this technique of embroidery as a way of getting my drawings onto products that were useful and that people could use in their everyday lives, because I didn't see myself necessarily as an artist. So I saw myself very much as producing things that people could use. And this embroidery was a way to do that. So I started, yes, almost 20 years ago now. And really from there, it has kind of grown and grown and grown from, you know, one or two products to now sort of about 300 products when you look at all the different designs that I do. And there's quite a large team of people sewing and selling and packing. And yeah, so we make accessories, sort of purses, bags, homewares. And it's a mixture of things. Most things are still handmade, and they're still handmade by my team. And then I have a range of things that I get made. If I can, I get them made by local Cornish companies. So I have tea towels that are made locally, mugs that are made in the UK. So I sort of try to keep everything kind of as ethically sourced and locally sourced as I can. Yeah. So that's us.
Yeah, that's amazing. And freehand machine embroidery, let's talk about that, because you do see that quite often now. But yeah, like you say, at the time when you started your business, that wasn't really a thing at all.
No, it wasn't a thing. So it was something that I'd seen a couple of people do it. Like during my degree, we'd been given people to look at, but you know, your tutors kind of home in on what what they think that you'll find inspiring. And so I'd seen some and I was like, oh my goodness, that looks like it's for me. But I was totally self-taught and I had really nobody else to look at. And actually, I don't really look at other designers anyway. That's kind of not anything that I, you know, it's not how I work. So I just, for me, I like drawing with a pencil and a pen, mostly a pen actually, drawing from real life, drawing from museums. And for me, I didn't feel like I could sell drawings or sell art. So it was kind of like, I can sell things. And how can I get those drawings onto things? And my degree was in screen printing. So obviously that's also another way of getting sort of motifs and drawings onto things, but I really hate printing. That's what it turned out. I find it really messy and I don't like working with wet materials. I like working with dry materials. So I had to, yeah, although that was what my specialism was. It was, for me, it was always about drawing and about sort of capturing the world around me.
And so when you create a design, do you draw it in pen first on paper or do you just draw it straight out of your head onto the sewing machine?
How does that work? Mostly it would be a sketch on paper first, and it may be sometimes I keep a sketchbook, although not as much sketching as I used to do. There's a lot more running a business than there is sketching and being creative. And so very often I'll go back through old sketchbooks and rifle old sketches to put into designs. But yeah, I'll work on paper first. It's not often that I'll go straight in on the fabric, but then sometimes I will, because you never quite know what's going to happen. And if I'm just working from my imagination, then I will. But it's not often that I do that either. It's usually that I'm working from a sketch or a photograph that if I've not had time to sort of sketch a scene, I will have snap a photograph and work from that later.
So what kind of things are you inspired by when you work?
Lots of different things. I think with my, in terms of my work in my business, we're quite practical about it. So there'll be I have what I call the wall of everything in my office, which has kind of this, the year of kind of product launches, marketing, all the different sort of things that are going on. And then I have two clipboards, my kind of autumn winter clipboard and my spring summer clipboard. And that's where any ideas that crop up during the year, not just from me, but from anybody in the team, they get jotted down on those clipboards. And then I have a fairly diaried kind of plan of, now it's time to do the new products. And then I go to my clipboard and there are all the ideas. And then I will kind of take it from there, but it very often ends up totally different to the things that are written down on the clipboard. But it works as a really good starting point. Yeah,
that's really interesting. So do you have a lens on, so you've got, say maybe you've got all your ideas, but maybe do some of them not fit with your business and others do? You have kind of a lens on what is your business or your brand?
Yeah. And I would find if it's something that I really love and really want to do, invariably it won't sell. I have to kind of rein in the poppy and kind of, because I have quite a commercial head, and then put my commercial hat on and go. And sometimes I just do it anyway, you know, and just because I love it. And I think it's important to do things that you love, but I usually find that happy spot between things that I know my customers will love and that I love to design and work on as well. So it's kind of that commercial head is always there, I suppose.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because I think lots of makers struggle with that, because they want to make, some of them want to make what they want to make, and they don't want to be thinking about what other people want. But obviously for you, there's that kind of balance.
Yeah, I think it's critical, really, because, you know, I can't come up with a collection that no one's going to buy, can I? So, but then sometimes I think, like, for example, a few years ago, I thought there's always a motif, isn't there, that goes crazy, that everyone goes mad for it. So everyone went mad for llamas and owls. So I thought, I'm going to do armadillos. That's going to be the next big thing. So I put armadillos on anything. Oh, they did it really, you know, it didn't go well.
So, that's a good lesson.
Yes, exactly. Don't try and be the next big motif. Just kind of, I feel like I know my customers quite well, and I know what they like. And I also, you know, you can push the boundaries and have fun, and they want to know that there's me and my personality in the things that I've created, but maybe just not too much.
Yeah, maybe classic with a twist, I guess, is the,
yeah,
just pushing it a little bit. So I find it really interesting when the first thing you said to me in this interview was that you did textiles at uni, and then you decided you never wanted to do textiles again. So I'm really fascinated how 20 years later then you ended up with a business built around textiles.
I know, me too.
But what was that? Is it just that when you were studying it, you just got so fed up of it because you were doing it all the time, and then you kind of had a break from it and came back and thought?
Yeah, well, no, what happened was I didn't actually do very well on my degree. I worked my socks off and I kind of did it wrong. And so in the end, I didn't get nearly the mark that I expected to. And I was so disappointed. And I just thought, what was the point of that? You know, that 3 years of really hard work. I did it at the time. I don't think I recognised what I had got out of it. And now I do. I know that I've got out that idea of a brief and a project and taking something through from inspiration to actually finished products. But at the time, I was just over it. It's like, why did I do that? So, and then obviously then going to do my voluntary work was so inspiring. And it was just to see what business and craft, how it can change lives. And it changed my life. You know, I could that feeling of creating something and then someone buying it is a wonderful feeling. And I think that, yeah, that captivated me again.
That's such a great lesson, I think, for anyone that, you know, when you go and study, it's not about the end result necessarily. It's about the experience you've got and what you've learned along the way and the journey. And then it's like almost like you had two different parts of the puzzle. You had the learning that you did when you were studying, and then you went and saw the business side. And then it was like, yeah, okay, now I can see how it's all going to fit together.
Yeah. And you would think that, yeah, they were very different. We're learning academically. I mean, I think when you're doing a degree, you don't necessarily learn that much about running a business. Yeah, you really don't. You come out with a kind of, oh, what do I do with this? So yeah, to then go and have that other experience was quite critical, really. But also, you know, if in the kind of time when I came back from doing my voluntary work, it could easily have gone another way. I had job applications in four different countries. And I had this kind of idea of, you know, I'd done my little bags that I'd made and I'd just locked them up in a suitcase for 3 years and not got them out again. You know, it really could have gone any way. And I should have mentioned, actually, when I was talking about when I started my business, I actually got contacted by a business mentor who sort of had seen something that I'd done. And she was, you know, uniquely bossy in saying, this is what you're going to do. And I think that was a real critical part of, you know, everything kind of falling into place and it being the business route that I went down.
But you do seem so kind of, you seem to enjoy the business part of it so much and be so business minded. I wondered, even if you'd gone and done a job and had a job, whether you would have veered back towards having a business and ended up on that same path. Yeah. I do wonder, because you do seem so absorbed with that. And I just think maybe you would have found your way back.
Yeah, possibly an entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah.
I do think I'm not unique, but I know that not all makers have that kind of side to them. I love the business side as much as the creative side. I think that's kind of very absorbing in a business. And I suppose it's also that constantly trying to do it better and get more organized, because you don't start with everything planned out and mapped and knowing where you're going. And so you're constantly getting better at doing things, getting more organized at doing things. And that's really challenging, but also really satisfying when you go, oh, look at that. Isn't that working beautifully? Which is exactly the point when another thing just goes completely pear-shaped.
Well, that's the thing, because business is creative. It's so creative. You are creating something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it may not be a physical product. So I suppose in mine, I get both. But yes, you are. You're creating a system that kind of works really well, is really, you know, a really satisfying thing to create. So, yeah.
So do you think that, I mean, you talked about the fact that when you do your degree, you don't really have any business training. Do you think that there should be more of that when people do degrees?
I think, yeah, but not, it mustn't be too narrow, I suppose, because I do think people can go in so many different directions. I've chosen quite a particular one, really. It's quite logical, isn't it? You design something, you make it, you sell it. But there's obviously, you know, designing for other people, there's licensing, there's a lot of different routes that you can go down with textiles, you know, tons of different routes. So, but I wouldn't have said that we were really taught about many of them at all. So I think, yeah, I think it would be, you know, I think in any degree, you're investing all that sort of money and time into doing it. It's good to have some ideas about what you can do with it when you leave, But at the same time, it's a beautiful time to spend 3 years creating without having to worry about that future. Yeah. So I think which is so important, because you'll kind of never get that time back of being able to just create without there being pressure on your creativity. Obviously there's pressure of completing things to deadlines, but it's not the same pressure as having to, you know, get by in life.
No. And I think that training is important, but I think sometimes we need to find our own way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you don't know what that path will be, but you kind of need to know that some path exists, don't you, to even think there's a possibility.
So true. So your business has been going since 2003. How has it changed over the years? Does it look different now, 20 years later, to how it did when you started?
It does and it doesn't. So I'd say, so to literally sort of paint a picture, when I started, my first workshop was up a little flight of stairs through a trapdoor in an attic. and I had my vintage 1930s Singer sewing machine on a little table, shelves with fabrics from the car boot sale, an ironing board. That was kind of it, really. And now my studio is kind of, I'm trying to think, it's quite big, you know, sort of like 1500 square feet. And I've got lots of boxes and stock and cutting tables, but I do still work on my 1930s Singer sewing machine. It's still on its little table. There's still an ironing board and an iron in the corner. So there's some things. I've still got my little stash of my favorite fabrics that I like to work with, and that sort of vintagey one. So the products are produced in very much the same way. Obviously when I started, it was all me making them. And then I gradually started to work with, you know, to find people that could make the products for me locally, but they work in the same way that I worked. So it's sort of grown, but it's very much stayed true to the original ideas and values that it had when it started.
Yeah, and I love that, because it just shows that you don't need all the fancy equipment and all the tools. People will say, oh, I need this tool, that tool, whatever. No, you've just got an old sewing machine and it works. And your business took off quite quickly, didn't it?
It did. So as I mentioned, the mentor, Julie Davies, who was incredible, she rang me up and she said, I'm a new in post in, I don't think it was the council, but it was an organisation in Cornwall she was working for. And my job is going to be to help all the craftspeople. And I was like, oh my God, that is a big job. So she organised a group of us to go to a trade fair in Harrogate, which was really, really scary. Of doing your first trade show, putting your stuff out there in front of people. But it was really well received and I took a few orders. And then I then did a London trade show, and then I had an order book like filled for 6 or 7 months of orders. I didn't stop writing in my order book for 3 days.
That's amazing.
That's phenomenal. And I didn't know where it had come from or, you know, what had happened. And at that point, I had given up. I gave up my part-time job like a month before the show. And I got came back from the show and found a new workshop because it was not going to work in the attic. So it's kind of like, right.
What do you think it was about your work that made people so inspired?
I don't know. I've spoken to buyers since who just said that they'd not seen anything like it. They just found it really enchanting, and people just wanted it. And I guess it's that kind of, what do they call it, bees on a honey jar. You know, you see some people around a stand at a trade show, and you want to know and you want to see. And I remember having this little sheet that I'd printed out that with how many weeks I had and how many things I could make in a week. And just filling it up as the orders came in and just going, oh my God, this is not going to, what am I going to do? You know, just saying to people, you know, people like, yeah, so we want it in time for Christmas, and be like, yeah, April is when, you know, that's when you'll get it. So, yeah. So, it was extremely exciting. And, I guess it's a sign that I'd made the right choices. Finding my workshop, giving up my job, which was a bit of a leap. It was that kind of thing of leaping and then being, you know, the universe coming into line, I suppose, going, yep, you made the right decision.
Did you ever feel at that point nervous about the decision you made then?
No.
You always knew.
Yeah, I think there's obviously things that make you nervous all the way through of running a business. But I think, and this is a lesson I have learned, is you've got to listen to your gut, and your gut will tell you what you're supposed to do. And it'll also tell you when you're doing the wrong thing. And sometimes you'll still do it anyway. And I don't know why you just go, right, I know I shouldn't, but I'm just going to do it anyway. And then you get, oh, look, that's why you weren't supposed to do that. Yeah, I feel like when things fall into place and feel easier, that's usually when you're doing it right. And I know there's a school of thought that says that barriers and getting over difficulties and getting through things that are difficult and learning is good. But I also feel like things are good when they're easy as well, that means you're on the right track.
So, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Sometimes things do fall into place, and sometimes you can be struggling for a long time, but it's not that there's a big barrier, but you just, I don't know, just a bit lost. And then when it's right, you know, it feels right.
Yeah, exactly. You do. Definitely. And it can take a long time to get to that feeling. Yeah. Absolutely.
You've had a lot of people work for you now, because obviously you just wouldn't be able to create everything yourself and, you know, and supply your demand. What was that like, that transition from doing everything yourself to getting other people to do it for you? Did that ever feel, did you feel like you were losing control, or were you quite comfortable with that, or how did that work?
Yeah, absolutely felt like I was losing control, I would say. And I've probably told this story before. The first person that did some sewing for me was my sister, and she brought in her first batch of sewing, and I looked at it and I was like, oh my god, this is not gonna work. It doesn't look anything like mine. Oh my god. And I got my partner in to come and look at it, and he couldn't tell the difference.
That's brilliant.
And it was kind of like, so I had to learn to go, you know, other people look at things so differently to how you look at your own work. And since then, I've been lucky enough to have some stitchers. Bryony, one of my main embroiderers, has worked for me for 16, 17 years.
Wow.
So, and she's amazing. You know, I do the first one, and I do now record little videos, which I've never done in the past, but I now do little videos, especially if it's quite a complicated little thing and it's difficult to find your way. And then they run, they'll do kind of test ones, and I'll approve it, and then they sort of go from there. But they do, I can tell who's done what.
Really? Yeah, I can see it's like handwriting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How brilliant. And most people wouldn't even know the difference looking at it, though, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Very funny. Yeah. And different people have real different tolerances of things that they like and things that they don't like. And that's, you just kind of have to learn it's fine, so long as it's well made and the quality and it's exactly, you know, how I'd like it to be. If someone else doesn't like it, that's up to them. But it's, yeah, but it is interesting to see what people's different thoughts are about it. But it was critical to being able to grow, was to be able to find the right people and be able to get over that kind of feeling that it wouldn't be exactly the same as mine.
Yeah. Was keeping it handmade important to you? You never thought, okay, I'm going to create this design and I'm going to outsource it to a factory. Was that ever a possibility?
I've considered it once or twice. I mean, I guess if I'm really honest, there's probably a certain amount of fear about that. About, I feel like a factory is kind of a sort of nameless thing with people I don't know. But also, whenever I've actually looked into the practicalities of it, you have to get large amounts and you have to be committed to certain amounts of stock. And in the end, I've found that we can turn around things around quicker. It doesn't cost as much, you know, and it means we can do small quantities and trials. So actually the way that I work actually works better for us. It's something I've thought about, but it's never felt right for how we are as a business.
That's so interesting, because perception would be that it would be cheaper and easier to get something outsourced than it would to do it handmade in Cornwall by real people and real artisans. That's so interesting.
Yeah. But I'm sure if I was going to outsource to China or something like that, to be honest, I've only ever looked at UK manufacturing, and I have worked, and I do, as I said, work with some sort of UK suppliers. That's part of our values, really, that we're not getting it made, you know, on the other side of the world. You know, we know who's made everything, and that's a big part. And I've worked with the same suppliers of the things that I don't make, that we don't make ourselves. I've worked with those suppliers for probably 15, 16, 17 years as well. So we're very loyal, I think, as a company. Yeah.
And I'm sure that's what makes your brand so strong as well, all those values.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. Yeah, I think it does. I often think if someone else came in and ran it, I'm sure they probably would have shipped it all off to China from day one. But I don't think it would be, I don't think it would have survived probably as a business, because it wouldn't have the core values of the things that make it what it is.
I just wanted to mention the way I read about it on your website, the way you create your products, in that you have outworkers. So yes. People aren't necessarily in like one place. So I think when people imagine people working for you, they might imagine like one room or a few rooms where people work, but that's not the case, is it? It sounds so traditional, and it does sound Cornish or like at least rural, but it's amazing. I didn't even know people still did that. So you just send sewing out and they bring it back. It's such a simple business model.
Yeah. I have a cutter in the studio, so she cuts everything, and we get some things cut as well. And then, each stitcher has their products that they do, and they get a box of products which they have a month, 6 weeks to work through. And so they just bring back their products all done, and then the next box is ready and waiting for them.
I just think that's so brilliant. Such a brilliant idea. And I think for anybody starting out as well, it's just a really viable option if you wanted to scale up your production.
Yeah. Because my first stitcher was my sister, and she had a young child at the time, so it definitely suited her to be working from home. And then it really suits all my stitchers, kind of value that kind of flexibility that it gives them to be working from home. Sometimes they kind of want to see some humans, so sometimes they'll do a little bit of work in the studio just to kind of balance out the being at home and sewing. But it just fits in really well around people's lives, especially if you've got young children. So it just seems to work well for us as a model, and that's kind of what we've always done. And I've sort of got core stitchers that do the bulk of it, and then we can, other people that might do small amounts now and again, or that are on hand when in emergencies. So it kind of can fluctuate as well.
And I've just got this vision of villages in Cornwall with lots of people in their houses all making things. That's amazing. Your team seems very much like a family. Do you think that's a key factor in the success of your business?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think any business is kind of the sum of the people that work in it. And I think I'm lucky enough to have people that have been with me for a long time. That said, I have also had people that have been with me a long time and they've left, and I've had to find new people to replace them. And the first time that happened, it was kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe someone's going to leave. That's not acceptable. Or not so much, not that it's like, oh my God, how do I find someone else to replace them? You don't leave a family, but you can leave a job, but you sort of, can you though? So yeah, I'm just very lucky. And I think that the people that I have found really love working in the business. And I think it's that thing that we're all quite engaged with it being successful, with it changing. The same things that make it interesting for me, I think make it interesting for my team as well, because they're not necessarily doing the same thing all day every day. They're involved in the plans for going forward, but they might be like, my wholesale manager also manages the sort of production and the fabric ordering and things like that. So she's got lots of, you have lots of strings to your bows, and so that keeps the work interesting, I think, and it keeps you sort of invested in its success.
Did you find that a big leap when you had to start managing people? Was that quite tough?
Yeah, I would say so. Again, so my first employee again was my sister. So that was scary, because she'd given up what I would deem to be a proper job to come and work for me. And so that, to be responsible for her wages was scary. And then that has continued to be the case. I think for me, that's the hardest bit of my job. I love the kind of managing and the systems and the marketing and obviously the creating and designing the products, but managing the people in it, I think I'm getting better and better over the years and learning more that is part of my job, but I find it hard. It's not the bit that I'm comfortable with, because there's, proper ways of doing things that, that people can be managed, and that's quite hard. And it's also very time consuming on top of trying to run everything else as well. So I sometimes do feel a bit stretched thin, and I wonder if someone could do that element of the business better than I do.
We had a massive challenge recently, obviously, with COVID. How did that affect your business?
It was pretty crazy. It was, initially, everybody, we were all really, really worried, really, really scared. I remember just thinking, so long as the shop can stay open for Easter, then we should be able to be all right. And then, obviously it was looking like everything was going to be shut. But then when they announced the support packages, I was just, the relief was immense, because I really thought my business was not going to be coming out the other end of COVID. We went into it with a full order book, having done two trade shows in the UK and New York. And literally every day another order would be cancelled, another order would be cancelled. We'd all the stock. It was all piled high on the shelves. And it was just, oh my God, how are we going to get through this? And then when they announced the furlough, I furloughed everybody. So obviously the shop had to shut, so I had to furlough all of them. Then all of the team in the studio, I was like, I don't think it's safe for us to be at work. Mm. Because that was not what we were advised not to, weren't we? So I furloughed everybody. Mm. And then I did a big email to all my customers just going, I don't know what to do. You're going to have just, you know, I've got all this stock. And then I came in to an empty studio and hundreds of orders from my website. And I hadn't done the post for years. And I was like, oh my God, how do I do this? So I was just doing that for quite a few days. And then I kind of came up with this idea of the embroidery club. And so that I sort of thought people are going to want to be doing online courses, that people are at home, they finally got time. And I had it right at the beginning of lockdown. I had this little nugget of an idea, and it took a little while to kind of do it. And then I didn't even really think it through. I just put it up on the website, embroidery club. It launches next week. Subscribe now. And I expected 30 or 40 people to subscribe, and in the end, 700 people subscribed.
Wow. That's amazing. So it obviously struck a nerve. You seem to have a knack for finding exactly what people want.
It was just incredible. I mean, it was terrifying. And, you know, so that was just me, really, for quite a few weeks, because I'd offered materials with it as well, which I quickly had to switch off because I couldn't find materials. I had to raid the attic for I was like, I'm sure I've got some stuff up there that I can find to put in these packs that I've told people I have that I don't have. So, because I offered the embroidery hoops with it and I just couldn't get them. And I had 30, and then I'd sold, by the time I'd noticed what was happening, I'd sold 100, and I was like, I'm going to have to get them from somewhere. And I had all my vintage embroidery hoops that I'd started my business with that I'd kind of archived. So they all came out of the attic. So some people have got my original embroidery hoops from when I started my, Future Fry memorabilia. So,
yeah. That's absolutely brilliant. And I love about that is the fact you said that you didn't think too much about it, you just went on your gut instinct and you just put it out there. And I think one, a brilliant lesson in business, just to test stuff and put it out there. But also I think it's testament to that time in lockdown when everybody was very forgiving of people just getting messy and doing stuff. Everybody was kind of in the same boat. It was kind of a feeling, wasn't there, that everybody like was just doing what they could and it didn't matter.
And there was something joyous about that, and really revealing of kind of like, wow, when you don't think things through, they can go even better than you can imagine. But it's really, you know, now I'm back to just thinking things through, procrastinating, worrying, you know. So it was quite an interesting, and I can imagine that some entrepreneurial people, that's probably how they are the whole time. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't know whether people have ebbs and flows where you have little pockets where you're like that, but maybe you can't be like that all the time. That's the way I tend to be, but I don't know.
What's Richard Branson like?
I don't know. He's unique. He probably is like that all the time.
I bet he is. I bet it's a nightmare. Yeah, so lockdown was incredibly terrifying and worrying, but also incredibly sort of business changing as well, and life changing, I suppose. So, yeah.
Is the embroidery club something that you still do now then?
I've just done my sixth one, but I'm in the middle of it. It's week three. Yeah, so later on today, I'll be live on Facebook in the embroidery club. So I do a live session every week to kind of go alongside the project. So they do a 6-week program, and every Saturday they get a different project to complete at home. And then, they can ask me questions in the Facebook, or I can do little demos of the bits that they found tricky or sort of whatever they fancy, really. So,
That's great. And that's just a different aspect to your business, isn't it? A different kind of revenue stream.
Yeah, it is. So it's become quite an important part. Yeah, important part of the revenue. And also it's brought us a lot closer to our customers, because you know, so many of them are in there, and they still buy products as well as making their own things. And they have a lot Yeah, there's such a wide variety of people. They have so much, you know, valuable input to give us. So if we're worried or thinking about something, we'll quite often just put it out to them and they'll give us loads of feedback about what we should and shouldn't do and ideas for the future. So it's fantastic. We feel like they're part of the team, really.
That's amazing. That's a really interesting aspect. And I think also that maybe they probably buy more from you as well, just because you're more in their consciousness.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I think they feel very supportive of us, you know, and we feel very supportive of them. It feels very like they do feel invested in our future and our success as a business, and not just me. I think they know lots of the team members now, and so we're all important to them, I think, which is lovely. It's quite a unique thing, I think.
What would be your biggest tip then for any artists and makers starting out, coming out of have their degree and saying, I never want to see textiles again?
I don't know. Yeah, go get a proper job. That's not my biggest tip. My standard big tip is to get your pricing right. If you're going to be selling products, then you need to make sure you've done your sums right and you're valuing what you're doing. And there's lots of different ways of doing that, but it's really important that you don't undersell. And I think a lot of people in the craft world can undersell what they make, which then undercuts other people that are charging properly. And that's kind of a bit of a minefield that exists in the craft world. And for me, it's about striving for originality, sort of striving to find your own way and your own voice and your own style in what you're making and designing. I'm not a great believer in following trends. I think you need to find your own style. I think that's really important. And make the business work for you, because if you're committed to it, you'll be in it for quite a long time and it will be a massive big part of your life. So you need to think, what do I want out of it? What do I not want to be doing? And what do I want to be doing? And try and have a think about that and structure your business so that you're doing the things that you love, the things that you are best at. And I think if there are things probably that you hate and are terrible at, if you can find other people to do them, it's probably sensible to do so.
That's a great tip. I think it's really hard to let go of things when you're a small business owner.
Yeah. And it can be financial. It can be I can't afford to get someone else to do that right now. But sometimes someone will do something so much better than you that actually you'll wonder how you did, you know, without them before.
Especially when it's lockdown and you have to come back to do everything yourself. That must have been a real shock.
Finally, full control.
I bet you really appreciated all the things that everybody did when that happened.
Absolutely. I couldn't wait to get them back. Yeah, I think by the May, I had most people back again. So, yeah, thoroughly appreciated what everybody does.
Did the fact that you had out workers help with that, or did that not really help?
There were no stitching boxes. I didn't need to make any stock, really, because I had so much stock on the shelves. I mean, my out workers were able to, because they're self-employed, so they were able to get their... Yeah, you know, there was support for self-employed people, but not for everybody. And I know what I did is I paid them to make scrubs and masks.
Brilliant.
Go and find places that need scrubs and masks and I will pay you to make them so that you're going and, you know, we're doing our bit to kind of help whatever needs doing. So, yeah, they did a lot of that.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You've done some amazing things in your business. You've been stocked in some amazing places and some amazing big names in the UK. But what's the proudest moment, I guess, in your business?
I think there's been lots. I mean, I would say that story I just told of the lockdown and launching the Embroidery Club, that was an incredibly proud, just a kind of, whoa, rush down to your core of kind of, oh my goodness, I can't believe that has gone how it's gone. But there have been moments all the way through. I think my first very exciting stockist was Liberty, so that was incredibly exciting, although interesting at the same time. You know, just, you know, they weren't very good at paying on time, those types of things. So I always sort of think that when you perceive someone as being incredibly successful for a certain thing, it's always good to know that actually it may not be the joyous thing that you think it is. I did orders for John Lewis. That was also very double-edged, you know, very exciting, but at the same time came with issues. And then, I mean, one of the best things I think for me is I went creating something new, creating a product that I know is going to just be fantastic. And there's that feeling of kind of oh, look at that. It's, you know, that is one of the best parts of my job, I think.
What do you wish that you'd have known when you started out, when you first started out with that sewing machine and that trapdoor and that vintage fabric stash?
That is a very good question. What do I wish I'd known? It's a funny one. My gut feeling of the answer to that is nothing. I kind of feel like the discovering, the learning, the journey is been the most interesting part of running the business. I'm sure there are things. I think like filing. I wish I'd done better filing from the get-go.
I think if you'd told your younger self that, they'd be like, no. Exactly. We're not doing that.
So I think, yeah, I think it is. It's the journey. And also the world is a very, very different place now to when I started. Facebook didn't exist when I started my business. Etsy didn't exist. Online marketplaces didn't exist. So actually, I couldn't have known a lot of the things that have come along to change the business world when I started. So I think I had, in a way, with my business mentor, she probably did tell me an awful lot of the things that I needed to know. So I was really lucky in that. And also meeting my partner, Justin, who's a jeweler. So he runs a creative business as well. And that's who I shared my first workshop with before we were together. But he obviously told me an awful lot about the kind of things, especially about pricing and about approaching people for wholesale and all those kinds of things, like sale or return, and how you must always say no to that. Yeah. So I think I did actually have a lot of input from people that knew the craft industry really well right from the beginning. So
and so at the moment you've got your very successful shop, your business online, and your sewing club. What's next for you and your business?
Well, that is an interesting question. What I feel is next is actually not growing but smallening, which I believe is a made-up word, but I think since the Embroidery Club has taken off and the wholesale side has come back since COVID, I just feel very, very stretched thin as a business manager. So for me, I'm just actually hitting a point of real rationalization of which bits of the business are working, which bits aren't working. So I think probably in 6 months' time, the business is going to look quite different to how it looks now.
Interesting.
I think it will be exciting, but it's also a bit scary and a bit challenging and having to make some quite big decisions about where to sort of focus my attentions. But I can't be as stretched as I feel that I've felt for like the last sort of 3 years, I'd say, since kind of that lockdown. I have been working at breakneck speed to sort of keep things on track, and it's not working. So it needs to be, things need to change. And I think that's the kind of effects of so many things being different since COVID. And it's the effects of so many of my materials and my inputs being more expensive. And I need time for my creative side to be able to sort of do what it needs to do to keep the business where it needs to go. So
it is really stressful running a business.
Yeah.
How do you cope with the stress and the kind of the burden of it, I guess?
Well, I do get quite stressed. So I'm probably particularly stressed this week.
No, I'm sorry.
No, don't worry. Don't worry at all. Whether this is, yes, what your listeners want to hear about, I don't know, but it is stressful. I run a really tight diary, and sometimes I look at it and I just think that's not achievable. I'm not going to get that done today, and the things that I want to do drop off the bottom, and that's really frustrating. So I know at the moment things have got to change. I'm making my decisions and I'm making the changes that are going to be necessary.
If people want to know more about you and where to find you, and obviously keep an eye on what's going to be changing in your business, where can they find you, Poppy?
Well, we're quite very active on social media. So we've got a great Facebook page. We've got a great Facebook group called the Friends of Poppy Trefry, which you can join, which is where you get to hear about things first. And then we have a lovely newsletter, and obviously our website, which is poppytrefry.co.uk.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Creative Slurp. I hope it's inspired you to try something new in your business. If you loved it, please take the time to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you soon, and go and chase your biggest creative business dreams. You can do it.